Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're once again looking toward the risk horizon and considering the shifting sands of geopolitics. We'll assess how events, particularly those regarding North Korea, are reshaping the narrative and the risk profile. We'll consider what the investment implications are of rising geopolitical risk across the globe and ask our expert panel what else should be in investor sightlines as we look to the future. We start with Sundeep Gantori in the UBS Wealth Management COO in Singapore, a director and equity analyst, charting in particular the North Korea dynamics. We spoke with Sundeep back in July, but how does he currently see the risk compared to last month?
We have moderately increased the probability of a North Korea-related tail risk from very low, which is around 0 to 10%, to low, which is 10 to 20%. This is mainly based on the recent developments, but bear in mind we still have a low probability and there is no reason to panic, as we still think that U.S. military campaign against North Korea is very unlikely. That being said, the probability of a decisive U.S. military action arguably increases as North Korea progresses towards a more functioning nuclear missile. And as such, additional news flow about North Korea's technological advancements on the nuclear side could raise the risk of an extreme escalation even further in our view.
There's been plenty of rhetorical back and forth between Pyongyang and Donald Trump of late. Is that front and center? And what, if any, are the other recent developments that led to a change in Sundeep's view?
Last time, we listed out three potential scenarios for North Korea conflict. The first one is status quo. Second one is temporary escalations resulting from increased sanctions and see a full-scale military conflict, which we think is a tail risk. Given the latest developments, I mean, you mentioned political rhetoric is one of them, but on top of that, there were other developments. For example, the UN Security Council approving new set of sanctions on North Korea. Similarly, North Korea launching two ICBMs in July and also recently issuing a threat to sink missiles in the ocean near a U.S. military base in Guam, which was early August. I think these developments have slightly increased the probability of a tail risk. Having said that, the situation will remain fluid in the next few weeks. With the latest development, according to media reports today, is that North Korea is now willing to take a more wait-and-watch approach on launching missiles towards Guam. So I think we'll monitor the developments. As I mentioned, the situation will be a bit fluid, but these developments in the last 1 month has led to slightly increase the tail risk probability.
Daniel Bargman is UBS strategist at the CIO, looking at global risk scenarios and their impact on global financial markets. What does he think has changed of late?
First of all, we still consider any meaningful escalation and a shift to the status quo in North Korea as a tail risk for now. But that being said, the tail risk is slightly higher than it used to be. This is primarily the case because we recently got a news report citing intelligence that North Korea may be close to developing a functioning ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead. And whether those news reports are corroborated or not is not really central to our update in views, but rather the very fact that a news agency can come out with such a report and that report would look believable at first sight.
Daniel has more on the sorts of frame of reference that are most useful in these fast-changing circumstances regarding North Korea.
Well, North Korea has been sort of an ongoing issue ever since it was established in 1948, and degrees of escalation have varied, of course, but more recently, it existed more or less in one of two states of aggregation, so to speak. So the first state would be that this issue existed in the background, and because there was no concrete news flow, it did not really affect markets too much. Then every once in a while, we would get a temporary escalation, which would result either from North Korea testing some new military technology or from sanctions being increased with respect to North Korea. Admittedly, what happened last week is the result of the latter, where the U.S. increased sanctions on North Korea, the U.N. passed new sanctions against North Korea, and that raised tensions. Generally speaking, we have always been able to get back into the status quo within a matter of days, and the impact on markets has not been dramatic or long-lived. But of course, and this is the scary part, North Korea as a source of conflict does seem to have an expiration date. Our base case for the time being and for the near future remains that there will be further attempts at sanctions and diplomacy. But ultimately, the US is unlikely to tolerate a situation in which North Korea possesses a ballistic missile with a nuclear warhead that they can launch at the US. And this brings us into a situation where a dilemma exists between the likely collateral damage that will ensue if the US takes decisive military action and obviously the threat of North Korea possessing substantial nuclear force. We hope, and for now we think it pays to hope, that sanctions and diplomacy will delay the progression of North Korea's military nuclear program. But ultimately, at some point in the future, a situation may arise that the threat of decisive military action against the North Korean regime is higher than what we saw last week. And just to indicate that danger lurking somewhere further down the line, we have raised the probability of the stale risk scenario slightly in our official communication.
Daniel Bogman. Let's reflect in more detail now on North Korea and how recent developments may have shifted the landscape. Frank Januzzi is president and CEO of the Mansfield Foundation, an independent organization that promotes understanding and cooperation among the nations and people of Asia and the US. In the aftermath of Pyongyang's apparent rollback on its immediate threats to the US territory of Guam, Frank shared a view with Monocle 24 on whether we saw North Korea backing down or making a tactical switch.
North Korea usually leaves themselves some wiggle room, and their statements threatening to bracket Guam were no exception. I think that the future of the next couple of weeks now is going to be critical, because the United States is planning for resumption of normal military exercises on August 21st. So while we have a moment of de-escalation, in a couple of weeks we may have another escalation.
And on that point that Donald Trump might present this as a success, how would North Korea react?
President Trump is not known for having a very clear strategy on North Korea, but to the extent that he has one, creating a sense of urgency is not a bad thing. Your listeners may remember that 20 years ago, when the United States first had an agreement with North Korea to suspend their nuclear activities, that diplomatic victory was only made possible after a period of tension and even threats of the use of force. So I'm sure that President Trump will claim a certain amount of victory if, in fact, they're able to get to the bargaining table. But for now, all we have is a North Korean decision to wait and observe the United States. Hopefully, the United States will take this moment to engage.
How will such recent developments around Trump and his unique version of events, perhaps that the U.S. has been talking in a language that Kim will understand, play in Pyongyang?
In fact, the North Koreans are pretty hard-headed, and they don't take an insult just easily. They have thick skin. But I think the key thing here is whether or not the administration in Washington has a plan to follow up their tough rhetoric with hard-headed diplomacy. And that diplomacy needs to be realistic in terms of the objective. Complete denuclearization is not going to happen anytime soon.
Frank Januzzi. John Everard is a former UK ambassador to North Korea, among other postings. We asked him, too, whether the North Koreans backed down over threats to Guam earlier in the week, and to reflect more generally on how Pyongyang is addressing the American rhetoric.
The North Koreans have actually been very clever over this. The original statement talking about firing missiles, not actually at Guam, was carefully crafted so that the North Korean military were going to draw up a plan and advise the senior leader, and Kim Jong-un himself was going to take the final decision. So they never actually committed themselves to the launch. And I think they've worked out that some of the American rhetoric has dropped back a bit. The Americans haven't actually done anything. They've just sort of banged the table and shouted a bit. So they've decided that they can, with honour, simply not press their own button. But the Korean version of the article is actually quite fierce and talks about, you know, if the Americans so much as sneeze, more or less, wham, bang, you know, off we go. Nevertheless, this is a real cooling of the temperature. Apparently people in Guam are breathing a bit easier, and I suspect people in Pyongyang are as well.
So should we recast this as something of a frozen conflict, at least for now?
remember, we're looking at a moving target, that all the time we're talking, all the time that Trump and Kim Jong-un are shouting at each other, the North Korean nuclear and missile programs move forward. Absolutely. And the experts are saying sometime late this year, sometime perhaps early next year, they will have the capability of delivering a nuclear warhead to a US coastal city. At that stage, I think the game pops up again.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at what else should be in investors' sightlines. What else should be in the sightlines from an investment viewpoint? Is the key takeaway here simply to not risk missing out? Sundeep Ganturi, again.
I think if you look at the underlying economic backdrop, remains very positive. Monetary policy is benign. Inflation is tame. Corporate earnings recovery is pretty strong. We have seen a very solid second quarterly results in the U.S. and also globally. So on that basis, I would actually say that these kind of geopolitical risks would remain. But at the same time, if you invest only based on tail risk, as I highlighted earlier, you would also miss out on the market upside. So I would rather continue to invest in the market while keeping or monitoring the ongoing geopolitical developments.
Talking about asset allocation, what else should be in our sights, according to Daniel Bargman?
First of all, we remain positive on global markets. We think the current environment is positive for risky assets. And once again, we think economics is more important than politics or geopolitics. On the microeconomic side, obviously, it's earnings and profit margins that are important. On the macroeconomic side, it's global growth, inflation, central bank policy, etc. As of right now, a lot of the risks that we see globally are of a political or policy nature. Obviously, there are certain uncertainties surrounding Donald Trump's domestic policy in the U.S., including how successful his corporate tax reform agenda is going to be. There are still looming risks of further populism in Europe in the background. We will see how that plays out with the Italian election. There's obviously China, where economic growth and the economic slowdown and a rotation towards the consumption-driven economy is being carefully managed by the government. But we continue to hope they're not going to take a wrong step. We continue to hope that they're going to do everything right, but this is obviously something to monitor. And ultimately, populism has been a global phenomenon recently. It has led to surprising outcomes in several elections and referenda, as we know. And rise in protectionism is still something that we're on the lookout for. Maybe more immediately, though, what we need to look into is what the Fed communicates with respect to its balance sheet policy. We expect some communication in September where they will hopefully give some forward guidance on how they plan to shrink their balance sheet.
Finally on the program, an eye to the future. Back to Frank Genuzzi first for a final thought on whether the seeming stalemate between North Korea and the US this week is exactly that, a permanent true stalemate or merely a delay of an inevitable reckoning.
Well, President Trump has said very clearly that he finds the situation intolerable. But so did President Obama, so did President Bush. The truth is, the unspoken truth is that we've been living with a nuclear-armed North Korea for the last 11 years. Chances are we're going to have to live with it for another long period of time. And the diplomats need to focus on managing this threat because they're unlikely to eliminate it. It's a very unsatisfactory situation, but it's where we are stuck.
Former UK ambassador to Pyongyang, John Everard, next. What about the prospects, in his view, of a dialogue between the US and North Korea?
One thing that the North Koreans have made very clear at the highest level is they're not going to talk. This will not end in negotiations. There's a special form of words produced by Kim Jong-un himself after the July the 4th launch, which has been repeated, I think, half a dozen times now in the North Korean media, saying effectively, we will only talk if the Americans drop their hostile policy, which turns out to mean effectively American denuclearization, which is kind of unlikely.
To Sundeep Ganturi for a view on the investment implications from the, albeit maybe modest, but nevertheless rising geopolitical risks across the board.
In the last 1 week, the markets have been volatile. I think there was a sell-off, a mini sell-off. But in case, let's say, of a tail risk event, which refers to a potential military conflict, if that kind of materializes, we expect negative market reaction. obviously there would be a risk of a related sell-off or a situation where I think safe haven assets would rally. And at the most sensitive markets, like, for example, South Korea or Asia would be down 20% in South Korea or Asia down 15 to 20%. But again, these are not our base case scenario estimates. These are potential downside estimates during a tail risk event. And I think even investors start to position only for the tail risk, I think they are likely to miss out on strong market performance. So on that basis, while we highlight our tail risk, at the same time, I think investors should continue to invest in a well-diversified portfolio. And given the strong underlying global economic recovery, I think we maintain our preference on risky assets with a positive view on global equities.
And finally, on this broader point of the present positive economic backdrop and broadly supportive monetary policy, are these but a couple of key markers to keep investors positive and in pursuit of opportunities despite changes in geopolitical risk assessment? Daniel Bargman.
We have been enjoying what can be referred to as a Goldilocks scenario. In an economic context, a Goldilocks scenario is a situation where economic growth is relatively strong, but inflation remains subdued, and that allows central bank to maintain accommodative monetary policy for longer. This confluence of events, or this confluence of economic parameters, is very positive for markets that enjoy positive performance in situations of global growth. So this is arguably the state that we're in right now. The Eurozone is growing at a faster pace since the second quarter of 2011. Emerging markets are set to accelerate to about 5% economic growth. Earnings growth in US and European companies is probably around 10% right now. So those are very healthy conditions. And we believe that as long as economic conditions are conducive to global markets, this is what investors are ultimately going to revert to. So as long as you maintain a well enough diversified portfolio to not suffer disproportionately from local risks, and as long as you especially can look through some of the short-term market fluctuations that can be the result of unknown unknowns, being in the market is the right thing to do right now.
And that's Daniel Bargman bringing us to the end of this 150th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at the website or via your preferred podcast platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.